The Tom Woods Show, episode 982.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're like me, you were a victim of educational malpractice when you were in school. Well, learn the history and economics they didn't teach you at mylibertyclassroom.com. And save yourself some smackers by checking out my coupon page, libertyclassroom.com/coupons. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Rather an unusual episode today. We're talking to Brandon Navom, who started a group called Software Engineers for Liberty. He was a Ron Paul delegate for Massachusetts in 2012. He's just a regular libertarian. Nothing particularly unusual about him. And yet he got caught up in the maelstrom surrounding the Boston Free Speech Rally, which somehow, for reasons not fully explained, we were supposed to understand was cut from the same cloth as the event in Charlottesville, when that's certainly not the case, and that was obvious the day that it occurred. It was a small number of people who were trying to give speeches, and tens of thousands of angry protesters, some of whom were throwing bottles of urine at people. They were looking for white supremacists, but didn't find any. But of course, for a lot of these people, everybody's a white supremacist. But there really weren't any by any reasonable definition. So Brandon was slated to take part in this, and merely being slated to take part in it was enough to get him fired because of the pressure that was put on his employer in this case. So it goes to show what I've been saying, that given the atmosphere of hysteria, I'm not worried that, you know, 57 white supremacists are going to take over America. That is the last thing in the world anybody should be worried about. There is no chance of that. And do not try to give me the comparison with Germany, when the press supported people who took nationalist views and academia supported it. I mean, you know what happened to Jewish academics, for example. So academia was behind it. The media was behind it. That's not true in America. The media and academia couldn't possibly be more opposed to these people. So you are a hysteric if that's your main concern. There is no chance that that's going anywhere. No chance of that. What there is a chance of is people getting their lives ruined and reputations destroyed because of cases like this, where they have literally done nothing wrong, nothing at all. They have absolutely no so-called white supremacist ties whatsoever. But the other side is so hysterical that anybody who's even involved in something that has the term free speech in it is now suspect. As Michael Malice said on Twitter, we are in real time observing the idea of free speech becoming associated with Nazism right before our eyes. And that was actually the most popular tweet Michael has ever written. It blew up and went crazy. And so here's a case of a real person who he could have signed all the anti-fascist petitions in the world, would not have satisfied these people. And his life, well, maybe his life isn't ruined, but his job is gone as a result of this. And he's just a regular libertarian. So it's exactly what I said. These people have been calling libertarians Nazis for years and years. There's nothing to back that up. And when you ask them about it, they don't say, well, there's some obscure guy in your ranks who wants... No, you ask them, why are we Nazis? They say, because you don't want universal health care. They never have any rational reason. It's not that we just haven't marketed ourselves well enough, or, you know, there are five or six undesirable people in our ranks who then went on to become racist. We have way more of ourselves who went on to become Bernie Sanders supporters, for heaven's sake. We have no control over that. And for heaven's sake, nobody issued a petition saying, oh, so many of our people have become Bernie Sanders supporters and therefore are violent socialist support, you know, because socialism has to be carried out through violence. And we disavow that. No one did that. Okay. That's a double standard. There are way, way more people in the Ron Paul movement who went on to become Bernie Sanders people. Way more. And there was no breastfeeding and disavowals and all that. So the whole thing is nonsense and ridiculous. But my point is, they're not calling us Nazis because they happen to know who some no-name guy is who happened to be in our ranks at one time or another and then changed. That is not why we get called those names. We get called those names because these people have no idea what they're talking about. They don't even know what fascism is. They don't know what we believe. They don't listen when we try to explain it to them. And then again, you ask them about it and they say, well, because you're for capitalism. capitalism is Nazi, because capitalism empowers racism, and racism is Nazi. Now, that is not true. Capitalism and racism have nothing to do with each other whatsoever. But you see, there really isn't any appeasing somebody who is at that intellectual level. And that is what Brandon Navon was facing. Let's get Brandon on here. Brandon, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Something really horrifying just happened to you personally.
Yes.
And in order to understand it, we got to understand what this whole free speech rally in Boston was all about. Everybody is under the impression that this was some kind of a neo-Nazi rally or something like that, because after all, there was just a rally in Charlottesville. So therefore, rallies must be suspect. And you took part in this and didn't really think you were doing anything particularly subversive. So what's the background of the event?
Yeah, well, it really all started when a friend of mine casually mentioned that there was going to be a rally on the topic of free speech. He brought it up to me because one of the keynote speakers, Shiva Ayyadurai, an Indian American who is running for U.S. Senate, is a bit of a role model of mine. He invented email, and he's now running for the Senate. And so little did I know that my attempts to actually try to have an Indian American in the U.S. Senate would cause me to be branded as a white supremacist.
All right, that is highly unusual. Now, on the other hand, weren't there at any time, weren't there any controversial speakers scheduled to speak at the event? Now, I'm not saying they were necessarily neo-Nazi people, but was there any controversy embedded in this thing at all? I want to just get that out on the table.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of controversy, but I think the thing people aren't understanding is that these were periodic events that had occurred before on the general topic of freedom of speech. And just about any listener or any speaker who wanted to speak, so long as they did not advocate for violence, would be allowed to speak. So there was a previous event that had occurred a few months before. There were some controversial speakers, supposedly, but I actually attended this event. I didn't remember very many of the speeches, and there was no violence. So it was just a small event that most people did not take notice of.
So what wound up happening in Boston was you had a huge, huge turnout of people protesting the event, absolutely enormous, in the tens of thousands. And what exactly were they protesting? Were there any Nazis involved in this?
No, you know, there were no Nazis involved. And what actually happened was there's a lot of irony here. Directly after the tragedies in Charlottesville, Virginia, CNN falsely reported that the same organizers and the same organization that were behind that rally were also behind this rally. And, you know, to be clear, I think it was a man named Kessler or something and a group called American Vanguard, and none of the organizers, anybody had even heard of any of those, that person or that organization. And what I think the link was that there was a report that our other keynote speaker besides Shiva was Gavin McGinnis. And Gavin McGinnis and the Proud Boys were also reportedly at Charlottesville, but that report turned out to be false.
Yeah, that would be very surprising to me, actually. All right, so it seems almost impossible to believe, given the hysteria, given that the president got involved. It seems impossible to believe that what you're telling us is the full truth of the matter, and yet, as far as I can tell, that is the full truth of the matter.
Yeah, and you know, I do want to be totally honest here. There is one point of controversy. You know, there was one person who did ask to be a speaker at the Boston event, who apparently was also at the Charlottesville, Virginia rally. And we had no idea that he was going to be attending that rally. And the moment that we found out that he was there, he was banned from the Boston rally. And we said that he would not be able to attend.
Okay, so that ought to clear that up. So then what happened to you? You somehow got fired from your job by people on Twitter gleefully celebrating, like attacking your employer, then getting told you didn't work there anymore, and then tweeting that at you. That's sick.
Yeah. So I was actually away the weekend of Charlottesville. I was out. So I hadn't heard the reports. And that Sunday, I was actually out clothes shopping with my daughter. And a Boston Herald reporter called me about the rally, said, "Oh, you're speaking at a rally next weekend." And I had seen news about something, but I didn't fully understand. And then I started getting all of these calls. And one of them was from my employer calling me up on a Sunday afternoon. And they asked me, they said, "We've become aware that you are listed as a speaker on the free speech event." And they wanted to know if it was me or if there was another Brandon Navom and it was just mistaken identity. I said, "Well, yes, it's me. I heard there's some controversy happened at a rally yesterday. I didn't know anything about it, and the two events were completely separate." And he just basically turned it over to the HR person, and they said that I was terminated, that Monday would be my last day, don't come in, I would receive no severance, and I was fired.
Okay, so I'm quite sure you didn't expect it to turn out this way. But now, did you think to yourself, though, that after what happened in Charlottesville, that I'm trying to think of what the connection could be that people would think, well, you're giving a free speech rally. This has to mean neo-Nazis. Maybe I'm naive here. Maybe I'm just not informed enough about the situation. I'm not sure what the connection is. But was there anything about the Charlottesville thing that made you think, maybe I better not do this?
Well, I mean, once Charlottesville happened, you know, there was no way I could know that those tragic events would occur when I casually agreed to speak. And I didn't know that, you know, my name would be put on the flyer, you know, until I saw it the first time. But it was just such a lightning hate mob of the false CNN report, Mayor Marty Walsh reiterating it, saying, you know, hate groups are not welcome here. And there was just a hate mob of people that tracked everyone down. They were going not only to my employer, tweeting at them to have me fired, but when the tweets, when they got a response saying that I was no longer worked there, you know, they tweeted that back to me as kind of like a ha ha, I got you fired. In fact, they found some information on some of my former employers, some old information, and they tweeted them thinking that I still worked there. And, you know, when they got a response back and posted it back on my wall, you know, my first thought was, you know, well, the joke's on that guy. I got myself fired from that job years ago.
Oh, good grief. All right. Well, does this make you toxic for the future, or do you think people will realize it was dumb for them to get rid of you in the first place, given that you obviously didn't do anything? And this is just crazy hysteria.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. My hope is that you know, in a lot of ways, I understand kind of an emotional backlash. I do understand that in the wave of the hatred, you know, my employer really had no option. And so that's why I've had a lot of people who have asked me to reporters, have asked me to divulge my former employer. There are some people, you know, on my side who want to do a campaign against them. And I've said, no, I absolutely will not divulge their name. You know, there's just been so much hatred and so much back and forth that I simply just am not going to add to it.
So what do you walk away from this with? How do you keep your head on straight when something like this happens?
Well, you know, if there's anything, it's been my sense of humor. It's been my ability to just laugh at some of the most absolute crazy things that just one right after another. For example, you know, after the wave of getting me fired, the next wave was doxing me, putting out my personal information, and then people actually calling me up to personally tell me how my life is destroyed. And something really kind of crazy happened. You know, I said, well, hey, you know, I'm the free speech guy here. So what happened when people called me enraged? I actually decided to talk to them. And this one person, this woman who's a left gay rights activist, blogger, very progressive, called me up and started screaming and enumerating all of the ways that she was going to destroy my life. And I just waited for her to pause and take a breath. And I said to her, I'm not your enemy. And something strange happened. We began talking, and she said, well, if you're not my enemy, why are you doing this? And I told her the situation I was in. And what happened was we had a really great, productive conversation. And I decided that I was going to pull out of the event because I thought it was the right and respectful thing to do. And I was going to actually work with her to try to get the event postponed. I worked with her and her name's Bethany, this guy, Doug, and Doug was like Mr. Lead, like Nasty Graham, who was like writing all this stuff all over my Facebook. And then Bethany was like, oh, there's this guy who's going to help, and puts me into a chat with him. And it's this guy who had been making my life miserable for the last day. And I just laughed and I'm like, oh, are you done terrorizing me now? Yeah, let's work together. And I actually, we had a voice chat, and that night he apologized to me, and he was kind of embarrassing because we've become really good friends over the last like 4 days.
Well, that's very sweet and everything, but he's part of the same group that got you fired. I mean,
yeah.
Is he having any second thoughts about being associated with people like that, or?
Do I? No.
No. I mean, this guy, your new friend, is he saying, boy, I'm really friends with some real lousy people who just victimized an innocent person. Is he having any second thoughts, or?
You know, it was funny because he that night, we went from you know, being enemies and him calling for my firing, saying some horrible things. And we spoke, and we actually came up with a really good plan that was feasible to get the free speech rally postponed to the fall. And after we did that, you know, when we had a real plan in place, you know, Bethany started crying a little bit. And then Doug kind of said, he was like, hey man, you know, I'm really sorry for terrorizing you. And I was like, hey, you know, there no apology is necessary. But it was amazing how we went from being enemies to working towards a common goal together. And one thing that gave me pause is once Bethany and I stopped seeing each other as enemies and started working together for a common goal, you know, we were communicating back and forth. We were all laughing. We were making jokes. And at one point, I was trying to get a hold of media, and she's very connected to a lot of media. So she messages me on Facebook and says, "Oh, I have a Boston Globe reporter. Give me your information and I'll pass it along to her." And I, without hesitation, you know, sent her my phone number and my email address. And as soon as I hit send, I just stopped. And I was like, I just gave out my personal information to someone who literally a day earlier had been calling for the destruction of my life. And yet I fully trusted her.
I guess you and I are just different people. I guess I would say you want to destroy people's lives and then realize, oh, wait a minute, I might have been destroying the life of somebody who was innocent. Oh, well, my bad. I would say that's just not a good person. Sorry, don't want to be friends with you. That's not a good person. You're going to behave that recklessly. You're so self-righteous that you feel like you don't even really need to investigate the situation. You can just be nasty, 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 try to ruin the person's life and then say, oh, sorry, my bad. I mean, are you going to raise your kids to be that way?
Well, I certainly won't. And I think this event has certainly caused both Bethany and Doug to maybe look at things differently.
That'd be nice.
But I wonder, you know, how many people in how many conflicts, if they merely said those same words, they said, I'm not your enemy. I wonder how many issues we could resolve.
All right. What other parts of the story am I leaving out? Because I'm basically letting you tell it because you were there, you know the circumstances, and we got very, very vague information about what happened in Boston. It's mostly about what the protesters did. That's 90% of the coverage.
Yeah. So the Cliff Notes version of this is I dropped out of my speaking slot, called for the postponement, and tried to get all of the organizers and speakers to delay the event as well. And the interesting thing is that the people who still felt they had to do it did so because they were being so badly slandered and maligned that the only way they could prove that they were not Nazis was to go forward with the event. So in a strange way, all of the hatred that was being thrown at them was just strengthening their resolve. And so when I begged and pleaded and did everything I could to try to get everyone to delay the event, and I failed in that regard, I did the one thing that I could do, and that's as an individual, I said I was going to join the counter protest. And this was at the invite of my newfound friends, Bethany and Doug. And even though I felt with all the things that I saw that there could quite possibly be a very big danger to my personal safety, I felt it was the right thing to do.
Now, Brandon, I very much sympathize with what happened to you, and I'm very sorry that you've had your life upended by this situation when it seems obvious to a normal person that you were blameless. So, I mean, I'm not rendering judgment on you because I can't imagine what it would be like to be in your shoes. However, as an outside observer, it seems nonsensical to join the counter-protesters unless you thought your own event was toxic or you thought there was something wrong with it. Why would you protest it?
Yeah, I felt I had to, you know. I saw this, you know, this powder keg ready to explode. And I saw the great potential for actual violence. And, you know, part of the ironic part was after Marty Walsh said this, you know, don't come to Boston, you're not welcome to these hate groups. You know, that was what caused this event to get on their radar. And so now some actual hate groups said they were going to actually show up. And I thought, you know, the chance for violence was too great. I saw everything bubbling over, and I felt I needed to do something to at least try to calm nerves and to try to, you know, create unity and peace rather than hatred and derision. And so that's what I had to do.
So make sure I'm understanding this correctly. On the day of the event, where exactly were you to be found?
So I went on the subway. We call it the T, the MBTA, and went down to Tremont Street to join the counter protest. You know, I don't think I would have been able to do it without my newfound friends, Doug and Bethany.
Let me make sure I have the timeline correct then. At what point were you fired? What was the day of the week?
It was Sunday. It was the day after Charlottesville.
I see. Okay. And then, so by the time the next event came around, it wasn't, yeah. I just want to make sure. Okay. So it was that early. I get it. I get the timeline now. All right. So go ahead. So you're on the T, which I've been on the T many times.
And, you know, it was crazy because I was thinking, are people going to notice me? Are people going to be upset with me? I was nervous until Bethany and Doug were there. And, you know, when I finally did meet them, Bethany gave me a gift, you know, a small American flag, a cloth one, you know, probably a little over a foot long. And I have to say that American flag became kind of my security blanket as I delved into, you know, some territory that I was very, very unfamiliar with. And I feared could quite possibly be hostile.
What did you observe there? What were your firsthand observations?
Well, let me say this. I think there were a lot of people there who had love in their heart. And I think there were a lot of people there who, you know, in a lot of ways were just like us. Who maybe were a little bit misguided in the cause of why they thought they had to be there, but they were, you know, they were more like us than I could have possibly imagined. And maybe I can only speak about my firsthand experiences, but I saw actually very few masked people. Most of them were just normal people carrying signs. And I saw no actual firsthand violence. So from my perspective, you know, everything turned out as well as it possibly could from a lack of violence perspective.
All right. What would be your final words or anything else that is central to the story that you'd like to have your say with?
Yeah. So I've spoken with the organizers, and ironically, one of the event organizers who was a Bernie Sanders supporting progressive socialist free speech lawyer says that he was barred from speaking. They set up this 250-foot perimeter around the area and only let speakers in with no media and no people to be able to view it. And in his opinion, as a free speech lawyer, he says that, you know, if there is not a lawsuit to combat this, this will be the biggest erosion of free speech, you know, in our time.
But I'm not getting that you were among the counter protesters who were there clearly trying to intimidate these people into not speaking. I mean, are you not seeing the cognitive dissonance at work there? Or what am I missing about this?
Yeah, I guess when I originally started to try to get the free speech event moved, I felt that we could still have the free speech event in the fall. Bethany was going to bring liberal and progressive groups to co-sponsor the event and to kind of give us cover from this calling us Nazis. And I felt it was a good workable plan that still allowed us to assert our free speech rights while at the same time generating a whole bunch of goodwill with the people of Boston. And so, you know, I would hope, if anything, that people would understand that, you know, right or wrong. And I am now getting a whole bunch of hate from my side. They're all calling me horrible, nasty things. You know, I've lost my job. And at this point, I wonder if I have any friends left, quite frankly. And, you know, a friend of mine did set up a GoFundMe account for me, which I thank him so much because I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to be branded a Nazi or if the Nazis are going to want to kill me for marching with the counter protesters. All I can say is that I have learned a lot. I've experienced more new experiences in this past week.
Yeah.
Than I really have in my life. I have a documentarian who is following me around, and part of the crazy twists, he accidentally got added to the list of speakers for the event, and so now my documentarian is being called a Nazi and receiving death threats from Nazis. And he, as a professional documentarian, said this is, looked at my situation and said it's the craziest thing he's ever seen. So, I mean, I hope there are people out there who are just supportive of what I'm trying to do and think I did the right thing. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's all you can really do.
Well, indeed. All right. Well, I'm sorry you had to endure something like this, but at the same time, let's see what we can draw out of it that's good. I mean, you're obviously drawing attention to a major, major problem, which is everybody's a Nazi all of a sudden, and we will shoot first and ask questions later, and you got shot first, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I hope things turn around. And I appreciate you sharing your story with us today. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. For the rest of the week, let's see what's going on. Tomorrow, Gene Epstein of Barron's, the nation's premier financial publication, comes back to talk to us about the flaws involved in happiness research, so-called. And then Friday, by popular demand, strength trainer and all-around great guy and, as it happens, libertarian, Mark Ripito joins us for some iconoclastic talk. That's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you are subscribed to the show on iTunes or Stitcher so you get all these episodes delivered to you. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.